symptoms are similar to that of people who have migraine, like the light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, intractable nausea, and some motion sickness and some. But one difference is that, you know, a lot of patients with vestibular migraine can also have a lot of constant lightheaded dizziness, you know, this disequilibrium that's present all the time, and that's aggravated by busy visual scenes that can be aggravated by moving too quickly as well. A lot of my patients tell me that this type of dizziness is in fact, you know, much more disabling for themselves, from them, compared to the attacks of vertigo that they experience from the attacks.
Severe headache is the symptom many think of first with migraine, but for some people, it may be other symptoms like vertigo that are most disabling and prominent. Vestibular migraine can have devastating impacts on quality of life. Despite that, it's often challenging for people with vestibular migraine to receive a diagnosis and effective treatment. How do we know the difference between vestibular migraine and other forms of migraine with vertigo or dizziness, and furthermore, other conditions that share this prominent symptom? Here to help us address these questions and more is Dr. Shin Bae. Dr. Bae, welcome to Migraine World Summit. To start, what is vestibular migraine?
In a nutshell, vestibular migraine is a form of migraine that manifests with vertigo and dizziness.
To just what extent can those symptoms cause disability?
It's useful to divide the symptoms of vestibular migraine into ictal and interictal symptoms. So ictal symptoms are those that happen during an attack, and interictal symptoms are those that happen in between the attacks. The ictal symptoms, of course, the most bothersome, the most prominent one would be vertigo. So, you know, vertigo can be a very disabling symptom, especially if it happens, you know, pretty frequently. You know, it can disrupt a person's ability to perform their jobs and the activities of daily living. There can be other ictal symptoms like, you know, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, nausea. Headaches are not as frequent. And, you know, usually if they're present, they're much less severe and disabling compared to vertigo. But in some people, the headaches also can be pretty disabling. Another point to consider is that, you know, once an attack is over, a person doesn't, you know, automatically bounce back to normal. You know, after an attack of vertigo, the brain can be left in this, you know, very disoriented, dizzy, kind of feeling off state for a few days, and sometimes even up to a few weeks. And this also can be a source of a disability for some. The interictal symptoms for vestibular migraine, a lot of the symptoms are similar to that of people who have migraine, like the light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, intractable nausea, and some motion sickness and some. But one difference is that, you know, a lot of patients with vestibular migraine can also have a lot of constant lightheaded dizziness, you know, this disequilibrium that's present all the time, and that's aggravated by busy visual scenes that can be aggravated by moving too quickly as well. A lot of my patients tell me that this type of dizziness is in fact, you know, much more disabling for themselves, from them, compared to the attacks of vertigo that they experience from the attacks.
So those interictal symptoms of the vertigo, those symptoms that are happening between actual attacks, can actually be the most disabling?
Absolutely. So, you know, a good example is, you know, going to the grocery store can be a very unpleasant experience for many people with a vestibular migraine because of the, you know, overwhelming visual scenes, the fluorescent lights, the shiny floors, the crowds that they have to deal with. And so, you know, even if they're not having an attack of vestibular migraine, navigating, you know, that type of environment can be a very unpleasant experience. And for some, you know, they have to depend on family members or even friends to do these errands for them, to go shopping for them. Computer work can also be another one that's very, you know, disruptive for a lot of patients, especially now with COVID going on. You know, screen brightness can be a problem. Scrolling on the screens can create a lot of dizziness. And so, you know, you can imagine many jobs depend on computer use. And if you're suffering from dizziness from these type of stimuli, you know, it can be pretty disabling.
When vestibular migraines are occurring ictally during an attack, are they more likely to happen at a certain stage of an attack, prodrome, aura, if the person experiences aura, or even postdrome, or across time?
can happen at any time. So, you know, between patients, it tends to, you know, be very different. In some people, it can happen during the aura phase. In some, it's during the headache phase or the attack phase, and some in the postdrome phase. You know, but it varies from person to person.
And again, for some people with vestibular migraine, there may be no actual headache phase. Is that correct?
Attack phase instead is, you know, the full-blown vertigo.
So vertigo or dizziness are common with migraine in general. So what is the difference between vestibular migraine and migraine with dizziness or vertigo as part of the attack?
You're absolutely right. So about half of people who have migraine tend to have issues with vertigo or dizziness. If you follow the ICHD criteria for vestibular migraine, what you will need for the diagnosis of vestibular migraine would be at least 5 vestibular symptoms, symptom attacks that last between 5 minutes to 72 hours, and at least half of them have to be accompanied by a migraine feature. It can be your typical headache, light and sound sensitivity, or the visual aura. And the person has to have a current or previous history of migraine. So, you know, technically, if you meet that criteria, you get the diagnosis of vestibular migraine. Now, in some people, the attacks of vestibular symptoms, you know, may not strictly follow that pattern. I've seen patients who have, you know, discrete attacks of migraine headache and with attacks of, you know, vertigo that seem to have the characteristics of migraine, but don't really meet the full criteria for the diagnosis of vestibular migraine. You know, for example, they get vestibular symptoms during their periods, or if they eat certain foods, they get the vestibular symptoms accompanied by, you know, cognitive difficulties, the dreaded brain fog, or, you know, sensitivity to smells, but not the full criteria of, you know, vestibular migraine. So in those patients, I tend to use the diagnosis of, you know, migraine-associated dizziness or migraine-associated vertigo. But, you know, the preferred term, if they meet the criteria for the diagnosis, would be, of course, you know, vestibular migraine.
Given your mention of triggers, Dr. Bay, are there any vestibular migraine-specific triggers of attacks?
Most of the triggers are pretty similar to migraine, like, you know, weather changes, stress, you know, menses, skipping meals, sleep deprivation. The one I would say would be more unique to vestibular migraine would be, you know, activities that involve a lot of head movement or, you know, a lot of visual stimuli. So since many people with vestibular migraine tend to be sensitive to these things, if they have to perform many activities that involve a lot of that, you know, that could potentially trigger a vestibular migraine attack for them.
How does the prevalence of vestibular migraine differ among adolescents and adults?
So vestibular migraine tends to affect older people. If you compare it to, you know, migraine headaches, typically, you know, people get migraine during their 20s, late teens, 20s, early 30s. That's the age group that is predominantly affected by migraine. Vestibular migraine tends to occur in people who are in their late 30s, mid 40s, or even older. So, you know, we're not so clear on the exact reason for this division, but it tends to affect adolescents and young adults much less compared to older adults.
Well, are there any connections between vestibular migraine and certain stages of life, whether that's certain hormonal phases like menopause or others?
Yes. So vestibular migraine tends to affect people, you know, following menopause. You know, the vestibular migraine patients that I see tend to, you know, suffer from migraine headache attacks during their reproductive years. And then the headaches tend to improve once they go through menopause. But then the manifestations of vertigo and dizziness tend to set in after.
So now to ask you about some other conditions, if I can, because this was of great interest to our audience, what about the difference between vestibular migraine and a few other specific conditions, Meniere's disease, BPPV, which is benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, of course, or PPPD, persistent postural perceptual dizziness?
So Meniere's disease is a particularly interesting one. So it has a lot of relationship to migraine. And no one, you know, really fully understands why just yet. So, you know, 50% of people with Meniere's disease tend to have migraine. Meniere's disease is a condition of the inner ear where something causes the fluid to build up in the inner ear. And as it swells up, you know, it reaches a point where, you know, the membranes actually rupture and then the fluids mix. And so, you know, you get these attacks of ear pressure, roaring type of tinnitus, and followed by, you know, vertigo attack. Usually, Meniere's disease patients, you know, they tend to have hearing loss. The hearing loss is pretty characteristic of Meniere's disease. It is a low frequency, asymmetric type of hearing loss. So it tends to affect one ear more than the other. Vestibular migraine does not cause such hearing loss. Typically with vestibular migraine, a person may have symmetrical but pretty mild, you know, hearing loss, not low frequency, asymmetrical type of hearing loss. There are people with both conditions, you know, vestibular migraine and Meniere's disease. In those people, it can be a little bit difficult to differentiate the attacks at times. Now, that being said, you know, Meniere's disease is much less common compared to vestibular migraine. And the attacks of Meniere's disease tend to last between 20 minutes to about 12 hours. Whereas, like we discussed earlier, for vestibular migraine, the attacks can last anywhere from 5 minutes to about 72 hours. Now, BPPV or benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, that's the most common cause of vertigo in adults. What happens in BPPV is that there is a loose calcium carbonate crystal that breaks off from one part of the ear and then it wanders into a different part of the ear. So, I have a little model here. So in each of your ears, so this is the right one, there is the semicircular canals. These that detect, you know, angular motion of the head. So if you move your head in a certain way, say if I move my head this way, and then this is the movement that will ensue, and it will detect that type of movement. And if I move my head this way, then there is a canal. This canal will detect movements this way. And then moving forward, it detects this one instead. So what happens in BPPV is a crystal wanders into one of these canals. Usually it's this one back here called the posterior canal. And then what happens is when you move your head in that position, so if I move my head this way and the canal moves, the crystal drags inside the canal and that causes the attacks of vertigo. Typically, the attacks of vertigo with BPPV are very short. They only last for a few seconds. So you get this, you know, you move your head a certain way and then as the crystal moves, you get this burst of vertigo. Whereas for migraines, vestibular migraines, although we can manifest with positional vertigo, the positional vertigo tends to persist for a longer period of time. So as long as you maintain your head in that particular position, the vertigo tends to last for that duration. The second thing to remember is attacks of BPPV are usually not accompanied by migraine type of features, like, you know, the headache, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, or the visual aura. And then the third thing is, you know, BPPV is quite easy to fix. You know, there are certain physical maneuvers, you know, we don't have to go into that today, that you can do at home yourself that can fix the BPPV. Whereas if you were to have migraines, a vestibular migraine, you know, those maneuvers won't help that. Triple PD, or persistent postural perceptual dizziness. Very similar name to BPPV, but we'll call it triple PD just to make things easier. All right, so that one is a condition where, you know, a person has this constant, ongoing, persistent dizziness, unsteadiness, disequilibrium that, you know, can be triggered by any condition that causes vertigo. Now, it often coexists with vestibular migraine. So, you know, because vestibular migraine basically causes repeated attacks of vertigo, and so the brain is left in this state of, you know, constant dizziness, you know, unable to tolerate, you know, quick head movements, unable to look at, you know, certain busy visual patterns. And so, you know, the two conditions can coexist, but triple PD can also be caused by conditions, you know, other than vestibular migraine.
That is very interesting and such a great breakdown of the differences and similarities and overlap. So is there any structural problem in the ear of those who have vestibular migraine?
Not that we can see. However, you know, in animal studies, they show that trigeminal stimulation. So, you know, trigeminal nerve is the one that's responsible for migraine. So stimulating the trigeminal nerve can actually induce inflammatory changes in the ear itself, in animals. It's not from what I'm aware, it's not been done in humans just yet. So although we don't see obvious evidence of damage to the inner ear, could there be damage on a very microscopic subclinical level? You know, that's a possibility. That may actually explain why BPPV is more common in people who have migraines. So, you know, could there be some really small damage to the inner ear that's causing the loose crystals to come off and cause attacks of vertigo? That's a possibility. That also may explain, you know, why people who have vestibular migraine may develop a little bit of a mild hearing loss, you know, later in life.
What is the relationship of tinnitus to vestibular migraine?
Tinnitus can accompany attacks of vestibular migraine. So, you know, depending on the studies that you see, I think if you put them all together, about half of people who have vestibular migraine also describe tinnitus during their attacks.
Viewer Louise mentioned that her primary doctor and her first neurologist were unfamiliar with vestibular migraine. Why is diagnosis so complicated?
I think the first problem is that, you know, a lot of medical schools don't teach much about, you know, vestibular disorders. You know, vertigo, dizziness, they're not really, you know, discussed in detail in the medical curriculum. And even if it is, they typically cover, you know, the more well-established quote-unquote diagnosis like Meniere's disease or BPPV. There's this general awareness of dizziness and vertigo. You know, unfortunately, it's not really widespread in the medical community. And then the second issue is, you know, vestibular migraine. Although the link between vertigo and migraine has been known since the ancient Greeks, you know, the term vestibular migraine has only been, you know, formalized since about 2012, you know, with the criteria coming up for the diagnosis. So it's a quote-unquote, a fairly new diagnosis. And so, you know, awareness of it is, still growing, not to a, you know, widespread level just yet, but it's getting there. And then the other problem, I think, is people who automatically equate migraine and headache. You know, when you say migraine, everyone's first thought, headache, right? And so there are people who, in this are patients and clinicians as well. A lot of patients, you know, don't believe me when I tell them they have vestibular migraine because, you know, first thing is, I don't have a headache. How can I have vestibular migraine? And, you know, I have patients who believe their diagnosis of vestibular migraine. And when they talk with other physicians, there's some physicians tell them, you know, you can't possibly have vestibular migraine. You don't have a headache. And so I think we have that issue there.
So how much does having an accurate diagnosis of vestibular migraine versus migraine with vestibular symptoms matter?
I think in general, an accurate diagnosis can take away a lot of uncertainty. You know, if you have like this chronic illness, you know, with a lot of symptoms, subjective symptoms that other people can't obviously see, and, you know, you've been going from physician to physician, you know, having that accurate diagnosis, that precise diagnosis, you know, allows you to focus your attention on that disorder and, you know, focus on, you know, treating it, getting it under control. I think it also helps physicians focus on something. If you're just saying, like, say, you know, you have dizziness that's coming from migraine, you know, it's very vague, can be difficult for people to, you know, wrap their heads around and doesn't really, you know, lend itself to much focus or management. That being said, you know, one also must not be too dogmatic. You know, although there are diagnostic criteria, I think, you know, those strictly adhering to the criteria would be good if you're conducting a clinical study. But when it comes to, you know, treatment, when it comes to, you know, managing a patient's symptoms, you know, I don't think we can be too dogmatic. You know, even if a person doesn't meet the full criteria of vestibular migraine, if the symptoms, you know, of a clinician is, you know, fairly certain that the symptoms are coming from migraine, I think it's important to, you know, start the appropriate treatment for it.
Do symptoms become more pronounced over time if untreated?
They can. So, you know, like how chronic migraine tends to also, you know, progress if, you know, a person has untreated episodic migraine. So in the same way, you know, a person with, you know, vestibular migraines who has a lot of attacks of vertigo can go on to develop, you know, worsening symptoms, you know, worsening interictal symptoms. You know, the brain doesn't really recover immediately after a vertigo attack. And so, you know, if you have a vertigo attack, you're still kind of disoriented, a little dizzy, and then, you know, even before you hit become okay again, you get another attack of vertigo that can put you in this, you know, worsening spiral of, you know, dizziness, vertigo, that just gets worse and worse.
Sort of the trap with chronic migraine, the inability to fully recover from one attack before starting another.
Absolutely.
So our viewer, Pat, who happens, like you, to be in Dallas, shared that vestibular migraine has totally destroyed her life. She was diagnosed recently by her ENT and has not yet found a provider to help manage her disease. How can people find the help that they need?
That one can be a little tough. Recognition of vestibular migraine is actually, you know, higher among, from my experience, higher among ENT specialists compared to neurologists. I think partly because, you know, most people with vertigo and dizziness get referred to an ENT specialist. But a lot of ENT specialists are, you know, not comfortable managing, you know, migraine medications, especially now when there are so many more medications and treatments that are available. And so they often refer them to, you know, neurologists for migraine management. But, you know, although awareness of vestibular migraine is growing among neurologists, it's many are still not quite familiar with the condition just yet. So it can be tough, I agree. You know, there are no easy answers at this time on how to, you know, find an appropriate specialist. You know, number one is, you know, you could, you know, provide your primary doctor or your neurologist with, you know, literature about vestibular migraine, you know, so that they can learn a little bit about it and, you know, work with you on managing it. Another solution could be, you know, you look for a specialist who's familiar with the condition and then, you know, get on the appropriate treatment plan. You know, a lot of times geographically that may be tough. And so, you know, a solution some of my patients come up with is, you know, they speak to me from time to time. We come up with a treatment plan and they look for a local physician who's willing to, you know, work with them and implement the treatment plan and go for it. Usually, you know, a lot of primary care providers, I notice, you know, they are very open to a collaboration like that.
Well, that's reassuring to hear. So now to discuss disease management, how can vestibular migraine be treated, first of all, from a medication standpoint?
The pillars of treatment are pretty much the same as with migraine. You know, you find the appropriate preventive treatment, you find an effective rescue treatment, and you treat the symptoms that arise from it. I personally use all the medications basically that are used to treat migraines. So, you know, the triptans, if they have headaches, you know, I use the NSAIDs as well. The gepants, have started to use them. You know, the older medications like the tricyclics, the anti-epileptic medications, the newer CGRP monoclonal antibodies, you know, all of those, you know, I use them in the treatment of vestibular migraine.
Now, in your book, Victory Over Vestibular Migraine, you introduce an action plan. Can you give us an overview of that?
Sure. So, you know, I wanted to come up with something that's easy to remember, you know, that encapsulates the whole comprehensive, holistic approach to migraine management. So I divided it up into, you know, the action plan. So A is for, you know, alternative therapies like, you know, the nutraceuticals, vitamins, herbs, the appropriate exercises to implement. C is for changes that you have to implement, you know, identify triggers, avoid potential triggers, get on a suitable diet, you know, create basically a lifestyle that is migraine friendly, you know, with routine sleep, you know, and all that good stuff. T would be a therapeutic, you know, options, you know, finding the right preventive medication, finding the right rescue medication if you need them. I is for the interictal symptom management. You know, migraine is not just the headache. Migraine is not just the vertigo attack. You know, you can have a lot of comorbid issues like anxiety, depression, insomnia, sleep apnea, motion sickness, and, you know, holistic treatment of migraine and vestibular migraine has to take into consideration all of these things. And the final ON is, you know, planning to move on. You know, life goes on, you know, important to consider, you know, what sort of impact a migraine or vestibular migraine could have on your life and to make, you know, plans for the future, you know, job plans, you know, how to build a little support network so that, you know, you have people that you can speak to, people you can depend on, people you can turn to.
Some very important parts of disease management. You mentioned exercises. Are there any specific to treating vestibular migraine?
Well, vestibular migraine specifically, we are going for exercises that, you know, help make the brain less sensitive to certain things like moving around too much or, you know, certain visual type of stimuli. And so in that vein, exercises like yoga, like Tai Chi or vestibular therapy can be very helpful. You know, they help make the brain less sensitive to all of these types of stimuli.
Natalie asked, are there any options in neuroplasticity training for vestibular migraine?
Absolutely. So, you know, neuroplasticity is very important in vestibular migraine. You have bad neuroplasticity and you have good neuroplasticity. So example of bad neuroplasticity is, you know, when a person becomes, you know, very vigilant of their symptoms, hypervigilant, become anxious about many things that make them dizzy. And then as they become more aware of that, they pay more attention to that, they feel more dizzy, and that spirals, you know, out of control. Now, good neuroplasticity is on the topic of exercise. So as you exercise, as you, you know, do your vestibular therapy, you know, your brain learns that, you know, it shouldn't be so sensitive to all these things that makes it dizzy, and that will help the person recover.
Are there any resources that you'd recommend for those interested in learning more about that?
For neuroplasticity specifically, I'm not aware of any. But like the VEDA website, so the Vestibular Disorders Association website is a good one if you're looking for like a vestibular therapist or resources on, you know, vestibular literature.
Is there any evidence to suggest meditation may be helpful in this context?
Absolutely. So meditation can be very useful, especially mindful meditation. You know, anxiety is a huge part of any condition that causes vertigo and dizziness. And mindful meditation can definitely, you know, be used to address that. You know, it can be useful in people who have depression, people who have insomnia as well. And those, you know, it's, you know, very, very common in migraine conditions.
So there's at least one new treatment that's being developed to potentially treat migraine through gentle puffs of air into the ear. Might that be particularly helpful for those with vestibular migraine or vestibular symptoms?
That's a very interesting one. You know, I've read about that. So far, the studies into it are small, but I think the potential for it is quite exciting. You know, based on how it works, it seems that, you know, puffing the air into the ear would stimulate, you know, several cranial nerves. You know, you have the vagus nerve, you have the trigeminal nerve, the glossopharyngeal nerve, and the facial nerve. Now we know that the Acephaly device can help with migraine, that stimulates the trigeminal nerve. And then the GammaCore device stimulates the vagus nerve, and so those work, right? In my publications, I found that the Cephaly device and the GammaCore device help with vestibular migraine. So, you know, that device where it puffs air in the ear, that could potentially help. You know, it stimulates the trigeminal nerve, the vagus nerve. So, you know, I'll be very interested to, you know, look at it further.
Great. So more broadly speaking, what does the future hold for those living with vestibular migraine from your perspective?
As we see the field of migraine advance, I mean, these are exciting times for migraine. You know, you have so many new medications that have been approved specifically for migraine within a short period of time. We have more that are coming down the pipeline. I think a lot as the field of migraine treatment advances, that also will advance the treatment of vestibular migraine. A lot of the treatments that are used for migraine can be used for vestibular migraine.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Bay, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave with the audience?
I think the main thing to remember is, you know, not to give up. You know, it's a tough diagnosis. You know, it can be tough, you know, finding the right diagnosis, but don't give up. You know, there is a lot of hope. And there are a lot of treatments that are out there. You know, most of my patients recover. Most of my patients, you know, bring their vestibular migraines under control.
Thank you for that message of hope, which is important to hear. Where can we learn more about what you're doing or follow your work?
So you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at the Dizzy Doc on Twitter. That's probably the easiest way.
And that's at the Dizzy Doc?
Yep.
Wonderful. Well, we have learned so much today from you about vestibular migraine, such an incredibly important topic. And we know so many people will be grateful for this information and the time you've taken to share your expertise. So thank you so much, Dr. Bay, for joining us here on the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you for having me.